But it's something that has to be done, obviously.
All right. As usual, I forgot to record this. This is we're talking to Tom from the Occupation on November 1st, 2011. He's on the food committee, the sanitation, the less popular one, and the process one, which is kind of less popular with a lot of people, but there's a few people on the process. That's mainly why I wanted to get you in here today, because to talk about the process that goes on in the Grand Assembly. Now, this is, I think you know that this is kind of an anarchist process that's being used.
Are you talking about at the General Assembly?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the whether there's a process with anarchists. This is this is a consensus process, uh-huh. And it's you know, our own specific unique consensus process. I think it's pretty close to most of them.
That's true, because you modify it. You know, as you have problems that develop, you change. Like you modified, you changed it so that people put their thumbs down, can talk right away. So we find out we smoke out some blocks early, right?
Right, exactly. Process group meets before and after every General Assembly meeting, and we did just institute a procedure where we allow the people who are going to vote against the proposal to stand up and say, you know, why they're going to vote against it and why they're voting against it and what we could do to improve it so that they would vote for it, so that we can get somewhere near a 90% consensus.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the consent? Any block will stop it, right? We're still at the full consensus?
Well, here's what can block it at this point. What we're trying to do is when we come up with a proposal, as opposed to a majority rule, mm-hmm. what we do is we adjust the proposal through amendments until we get about 90% of the people supporting it. So if we have 75% in favor, that's not good enough to pass it. We will let the people who are against it speak and tell us how we can change it so that they would support it until either we get about 90%, or it can be taken back to a working group to be changed there, or it can just be tabled until the next GA meeting, until the next General Assembly.
I don't know. You know, well, it is kind of. I've gone to free radios use an anarchist process, and we have the, you know, consensus and blocks and stand asides and all that stuff. And they use that at Sub Rosa too. I mean, I haven't been to a Sub Rosa meeting, but some other meetings that I went there on, like the anti-cop stuff, we're using those. Although their small groups were more about brainstorming and coming up with ideas, whereas in at the Occupation, the small groups actually are where most of the work is actually done, or it's done autonomously.
Yeah, there is an awful lot of work done in the working groups. We try to keep it as much as possible in the working groups so that we don't spend, because some of the General Assembly meetings get long and contentious, mm-hmm. and in the end, we've gotten nowhere. So mm-hmm. the working groups, for example, the Direct Action Group, if they want to have some kind of an action, it's good to work it within the group until they've got something that they think is good and something that they think might pass the General Assembly. Instead of just saying, you know, let's have a, you know, an action on Saturday, they get down the details and they say this is exactly how it's going to go. And then if they need to change it, they're either willing or not willing to change it to get that 90%. Mm-hmm. But we try to keep most of the work in the working groups, because or else the General Assembly meetings get pretty crazy and pretty long, and mm-hmm. then we lose people. People start walking off after a couple hours.
They get boring, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, actually, so you've made it actually a little more difficult to get through. I mean, to me, the problem with consensus is it's very hard to get anything done. In fact, I personally have a belief that someone, you know, injected that into the left at some point. It's really not a part of anarchism. It's a Quaker thing. And ever since they've used consensus, you know, the left hasn't really achieved very much. I mean, the Vietnam War is the last thing I can remember, except for that affects my life. You may have saved a few trees here and there, and, you know, Seattle in 99, but no real major changes, except for the pot stuff. But that was more Valerie Corral kind of spearheading it, and she does run a collective, but I think it's run more like a monarchy than a true collective. But so you're adding this extra. Not only can it be blocked now, but it also has to have at least 90% thumbs up or stand asides.
Yeah, and it is approximately 90%. Although earlier this evening I challenged, asked them to make a count, because it was very close to 90%.
Yeah.
And So because 90% is the approximation, if somebody feels that, you know, maybe it's not quite 90%, then I think that's a valid questioning of the process. But a block would be something where they can't, where the group can't move on, can't adopt this proposal until the block has been lifted. And that's usually only if the person feels that this proposal goes against our established principles.
Mm-hmm. Or their own personal...
Right, exactly. Or
they have to really feel strong about it in order to use it.
Right. In fact, somebody had mentioned that it's like you're saying... if this goes through, I'm walking out of here and I'm not coming back. This is against everything I believe in. So it's a pretty serious thing.
Well, to me, it's the opposite. If this, it's not going to go through. I'm going to come every day and block it. You know.
Right. I would like to say that one of the reasons I think that people are using a consensus to achieve a really high majority, a 90%. Is that a lot of people feel that they haven't had a voice in the policies of the U.S. government.
Right.
And that possibly 50% plus one against 49.9% it tends to be abusive and, in fact, has been really abusive.
Well, it can be. Every technique of government has its drawbacks and advantages. I'm a panarchist myself. I just believe use the right thing, right tool, right, get the right government for the job, you know.
Right.
I had a chance to block consensus. Somebody said, should we continue with consensus? But at that point, I'd already blocked a couple times, and I was feeling the power. You know, power tends to corrupt, and the individual does have power. And I did, actually, the ones I did block were ones that were to limit the effect of the individual. They were to stop a proposal by an individual being put on the board or to make them wait or anything. I'm going to automatically block anything like that because I think the block and the ability for individuals to put proposals on that really make it, does really create that free voice, because a lot of times you can't get on stack. Sometimes I block just to get on stack, you know, because at night nobody sees you. I'm blind. I'm not going to see the stack people pointing to me or anything. And so I either don't say anything or will block. But now with that thumbs down, so I can get on stack pretty easy. So that does help, I think. I do have a suggestion on that. I did think it was a good innovation. You snuck it through without the GA actually voting on it.
We
it
try.
It could have been a couple hours, you know, otherwise.
Yeah.
And nobody seemed to mind. I think it. But once someone blocks, then I think you should go towards the other side, the people that want to pass the amendment, and start hearing their point of view. Because once someone is actually blocking, that's more important than hearing the rest of the thumbs down, I think. And I was also thinking that maybe the people that are for it should be split between arguments for it and friendly amendments to help it pass, because I don't really, I'm wondering if the people that have their thumbs down should be allowed to just put amendments on.
Well, what we would want, if we're trying to get to 90%, it seems to me, is one of the people who are voting against it can say, all you have to do is add this little thing or change this little thing, and then I'll vote for it. Then
yeah.
We check with the person whose proposal it is, or the group, and say, is that okay with you? And if they say, yeah, well, there's one more person with a thumbs up.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I get that point, too. But it seems like a lot of what slows it down is all these amendments, you know, because all of a sudden now they're brand new amendments. Someone just popped it out of their head. And then we have to, debate about that for 10 minutes.
So we do have this recommendation that, and it's only a recommendation, that anyone who wants to put a proposal on the agenda should announce it the night before. And that way, people at the General Assembly have a chance to think about it, have a chance to talk about it, ask questions before the General Assembly meeting the next day. So that seems to help. But, of course, people don't have to do that. So
yeah,
we still have
to. Yeah, that was one of my blocks. And I continue. The guy that was facilitating was so fast, he switched it to a recommendation before I realized, wait, I'm just blocking a recommendation. Okay, well, I guess. But they do turn into when we talked about it later, you kind of acted a little bit for a second that it was required. Because it's just so, because the note-taking isn't always there. That's another thing that's really critical. If we're going to pass laws that affect other people, we should fight, get the exact wording right and everything, because that's... critical.
Well, that's right.
in regular legal stuff. Every word means something in court,
Absolutely, absolutely. We have had a few meetings where the notes sort of got lost, the minutes, but we are asking the people who take notes to please email them and get them so we can get them on the website the next day. And I think it might be a good idea to get... usually when somebody has a proposal, right before we take a consensus on the proposal, somebody says, the facilitator might say, okay, what is the exact proposal? What, you know, can you repeat
exactly
what it is? And if there were any amendments, could you please repeat it with the new amendments in it? And then the note taker really has to get that down.
Yeah.
Because we have had a few disagreements on exactly what we consensed on.
I was going to say, I mean, probably someone from process, because I don't think you can trust media to get it either. Because I mean, process is always there. I know there's always like four or five people in the process meeting, both before and after. So, you know, I'd rather see somebody actually getting the notes than having, you know, a vibes guy. And there's a lot of extra co-felicity. There's a lot of extra people that, you know, I think the notes are more important than actually standing up and whooping when they get upset. I mean.
Well, I took notes a couple of nights ago. It was Friday night. Sent them in the next morning, and they got on the website that afternoon. And I noticed the next couple of nights I decided I'd take a break, and I didn't raise my hand because you got to take notes throughout the whole meeting,
yeah,
and then you got to go home
thing.
And type
yeah,
the whole
I know,
thing
that's
up.
That's a lot of work.
It is. It's you know, it's a you know.
You should get first pick of the food,
or something, anything.
Yeah.
Just something. But yeah, it is a responsibility, and we've got to make sure people know that. You know, don't volunteer unless you are willing to send those notes in the next day.
So. Yeah, yeah, because like I said, if it's a lot, because then you go the next. You know, last night we did this, and I go, well, I didn't know that. You know, how can I vote without really knowing what's going on? You know, I'm hoping Dennis wants to start a new show on free radio. You know, by the way, listeners, there's always a chance that you could get your own show on free radio. It's $30 a month, $20 if you go to the meetings, and there's even a discount if you're poor or disabled. So he wants to put a news show on. Then I had him on last week because he was like, for one day, he was the only one going out actually protesting. There's
right.
a huge logistical trail behind him of all these people doing all this stuff. But in terms of protesting, other than the occupation, there's not a lot of that going on.
Right. You know, I really appreciate his motivation. You know, he knows what we're here for, and he's not willing to wait around for some committee to form something. He's just going to go out there and do it, and I really appreciate
autonomous action,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Because there's some people in, like, the Direct Action Committee, now it's called Tactics, that really don't want to get in the face of the authorities. They'd rather, you know, keep it on the nice side so we don't get hassled and stuff. But part of the reason we're there is to get in the face of the authorities, because they've fucked up this world.
Well, that's right. And as far as I've seen, there are... People have very different views about what we should and shouldn't do as a mm-hmm. group, and so we're trying to remind people that any person or any group of people can do whatever they choose to,
mm-hmm.
just not necessarily as members, depending on the action, as members of this group. But I know that there are people who want to go out and do things that that would be prohibited by Occupy Santa Cruz. It would be go against.
Well, if there's violence, or yeah, the philosophy there. We have a philosophy of nonviolence and a strategy of
no property
destruction,
yeah.
or defacement.
Right, right. Which, you know, some people think is very good. I kind of think it's good for the movement. However, I'm not opposed to property damage per se. I'm opposed to violence, but I'm not opposed to property damage, and I'm. Just hoping that everybody that's in our group knows that you don't have to wait around for the tactics committee to come up with an appropriate, acceptable, you know, you can get together with a few people and go ahead and do what you think is right.
That's what Dennis is doing, yeah.
And
I'd like to go to all the banks, because if they're going to lock their doors with four or five people in front of us, we could shut down every bank in Santa Cruz and get on the news for it, you know. That's the other thing. I mean, there's 1,400 occupies, you know, so... part of the reason we're not growing is because, you know, everybody's going to their own Occupy in their own time. There's one up at the Cabrillo, and San Jose's got one. They're going to go over and support them maybe soon here. They only have a few people there. So, you know, what really makes these grow is the pictures of the police harassing people. And that means, I mean, all the real radicals from here were heading up to Oakland the minute the cops were showing up, you know. So I'm not saying that we should get the cops on our case, but I do think, you know, we have the opportunity here, because the cops aren't going to really hassle us as long as those other occupiers are there that could send hundreds of people here. They are very afraid of that, I'm certain.
Right. You know, I haven't gotten a report back from either Occupy UCSC or Occupy Cabrillo, but there's no doubt that having three separate Occupies in town is reducing the our ability to do things.
Yeah. Well, also because this our occupation is split between the camp and the assembly. The assembly area is a very good spot for visibility with the traffic going by and the steps. It's just like, you know, an Athenian democracy or something. But it's on the county land when they're kind of, I mean, they gave like 647E tickets last year. As soon as they figured out how they could give us tickets, it took them a month. So this time you're on the city land in the park, and they're not really hassling so much. They might if we were at the city hall, but they're not hassling in the park for some reason, probably because they're afraid of more people showing up. So that means people have to watch the stuff in the camp, and people have to watch the stuff on the steps. So during the day when most people are working, there's very few people that are available to actually go out and pick at the banks or something like that. And that gets me, you're talking about violence. There is an issue, because that park is a notorious park for violence. There's been, there are a couple stabbings under the bridge there at the other end of the park. There is a lot of junkies, speed freaks, and alcoholics in that park. And you're having trouble with them. We had trouble with them last year.
Yeah, in fact, there's been a lot of discussion at the General Assembly meetings and down in the encampment in the park. There's a working group, a committee for the camp itself. There's been an awful lot of discussion about some of the folks that are camping down there, but who maybe aren't participating in Occupy Santa Cruz, and some of them have been causing some problems, and so there's a lot of different opinions on how we should handle that situation. It's been a little bit contentious, but there's no doubt that there's been some violence down there, and there are a few other potential problems, some drug use, and some other potential problems, but we haven't figured out a policy, I guess, basically. Mm-hmm. We're still talking about that. And in the meantime, we're trying to, the folks that have been camping have been giving some amount of autonomy as far as protecting themselves, mm-hmm. doing what it takes to keep themselves safe. And I'm not sure at what point the General Assembly might decide to take up some sort of policy. In the meantime, we're just kind of muddling through it, and the camp group itself is making the decisions, having their sort of security mm-hmm. taken care of with the camp, and the General Assembly has given them that autonomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you made an interesting proposal, I guess it was last night, about circling up the tents to make it a little easier to defend the position, which I lie. I mean, I've been saying for a long time they need a fence. Last year we needed some kind of door. I mean, to keep the disruptive people from, you know, fucking it up for everybody else. I mean, normally a normal person could just shut the door, their door to their house, and be in peace and tranquility, you know. But when you're, you know, occupying, you know, or out in the, you know, you can't really turn to the cops. There's a whole lot of anarchists that don't want anybody to call the cops. So what are you going to do? You can't use violence against the people that are using violence on you. So it's a very difficult situation.
It is. And one of the things that people have talked about, and people have kind of agreed, that any individual person who feels they're in danger can certainly call the police, but nobody has suggested any sort of a policy that we would call the police at any particular time. Mm-hmm. So it seems like in general folks want to stay away from the police for a number of different reasons. We don't want them to come down and deal with people who are breaking the law, because, well, heck, we're breaking the law, and mm-hmm. We don't know that they might just say, you know what, we're just going to take all your tents and give you guys all tickets, because, you know, if you guys got these problems down here and you can't take care of them, you need to call us. So
they have a they have a duty to protect First Amendment protests. That you can actually sue the officers individually and collect money from them under a Title 42, 1983 suit. So yeah, they can't pull anything like that. And if they could actually, anytime they want, they could come in and start taking your tents because you're violating the law. So you don't really have. The only reason they're doing that, like I said, I think they're scared. because they have the tools. They did it last year. As soon as we went to the city hall, boom, tickets started flying. You know, so the city, for some strange reason, like I said, I think it's because they're scared that more people will come.
Well, and it's possible. I don't know. And again, I'm not an expert on this, but I know that a lot of the workers for city and county have been negatively impacted by some of the financial policies. Some of the financial policies that filter down from the federal government, the states and counties have been under more financial pressure, and there have been cutbacks, there have been pension reductions, and I think that in general, the cops, their job is to, in general, protect property a lot and, you know, protect the status quo. At the same time, they are definitely in, you know, they're not in the 1% of income. They're not rich.
Sort of. The retiring police chief gets $180,000 a year for doing nothing, almost $180,000, over $170,000 for doing nothing. He retired at like 51, 52. He's going to get it for 30-some years. It's like hitting the lottery, you know. To me, that's close enough to the 1%, but you're right. That is only $180,000 a year, unless it's by household, because it's like something like $307,000 and above is the 1%, and that's falling because everyone is getting hurt. Even the rich are being hurt by this bad economy. Even the ones on the very very top could have made a lot more had they not just stolen everything from the poor people. The economy is contracting because demand is going away, because the people that actually earn the money aren't getting it. They're just to survive, they're going into debt and stuff. You know, it's not feasible to continue. It does lead to revolution. This is the beginning of revolution.
You know, I don't know, but it sure seems like it. It seems like, you know, you can only take so much.
That's right.
You know, France in the late 1700s, they were kind of in a situation where, well, what else do we do? You know, I mean, it just seems like the solutions aren't right around the corner. The government isn't coming up with anything.
Well, the solution is very easy. Just take the money away from all the rich people and redistribute it to the people that actually earned it. And because that's how we got into this mess. They gradually just, you know, cut their own taxes, raised everyone else's, and, you know, raised your rent, raised the price of everything, and, you know, it's just a struggle to survive. Like I said, you have to go into debt to survive for a lot of people, and that's not sustainable over the long term. So we are going to see more of a revolution in the future. I mean, this is just the first. I've seen a lot of people. I know a lot of the anarchists, activists in town. I don't know a lot of the anarchists, so they're very secret. I know a few of them. But I'm seeing a lot of new faces at this event. This is more middle classes coming in and starting to get more active and committing a crime, direct action, the ones that sleep there.
Right. Well, there does seem to be a much larger percentage of people who are completely dissatisfied and you know, are believing that there's nothing that they can do politically, that their political voice is non-existent. That, you know, you were talking about the wealthy people, the large corporations, they are going in and writing their own laws so that they can steal more money, and the vast majority of the people in the U.S. feel that they can't do anything politically, and the next step is, well, we've got to do something that's non-political, and so
outside the parties.
Yeah, way outside the parties. Yeah, I think that the Democratic Party really failed miserably. You know, I think Mr. Obama has really, really disappointed.
He's really just an old Republican. You're the same age as mine.
Yeah.
His platform is the same as a moderate Republican back 20, 30 years ago, you know.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, whereas there is no Democratic Party anymore. There's the old Republican Party, and then now there's the Nazi Republican Party. This is right and further right.
Yep.
And somebody once told me, what is that? I forget that show is. Anyway, they said he was moderate, and he's like O'Neill or whatever, and he's far to the right, you know. The whole debate has been shifted to the right.
Well, certainly, I was never a Richard Nixon fan, but looking back, you know, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Air and Clean Water, and I mean, of course, he was, you know,
it was a Democratic Congress back in those days for the most part.
Right, and I honestly think that that Mr. Nixon was afraid of the people. I think he was afraid of the people of the United States taking to the streets and what have you. And I don't think those were things that he wanted to do. But it seems to me that the U.S. government has moved so far to the right, like you said, the Democratic Party is a moderate Republican platform at this point.
So you were saying Nixon granted some reforms to diffuse the revolution.
Well, he was, to me, a lot more liberal in a lot of the things that he's done than Mr. Obama is today.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a Quaker, so he probably believed in consensus, too, so somewhat of an... I was going to say, this is anarchist. It is anarchism that's being practiced there. It is people's democracy. That's my opinion of what anarchism is. A lot of anarchists think democracy is a dirty word. You're more of a, you know, mainstream. You've put ballot initiatives on and helped people get elected. You know, a ballot initiative is actually a form of anarchism that's not recognized by anarchists because it is... all the people get to vote on it. Everybody has a voice on that. You can even help write one and just get the signatures. It's not like you're putting some boss in power that's going to, you know, fuck you in the end. You can write those things and get them passed. And that's actually how, like I said, the marijuana initiative, one of the few things the left has achieved, was achieved through a ballot initiative.
Right. And it does seem a lot of people don't like it, but it seems... It seems to be a good process to me. Like you said, the people are actually voting on it as opposed to hiring somebody that you hope is not going to be corrupted by what goes on in Washington, D.C.
Big money waved in his face.
Yeah. It seems to me I've seen people who went in there with the best intentions and just turned to rot, you know.
Well, power corrupts, tends to corrupt.
That's what it seems like.
And absolute power corrupts, absolutely. So that's another danger to anarchism. Now we all have a little bit of power. We can all block anything, or we can all put a proposal on. And so we have to be wary about that, because some of these proposals, anyways, are trying to control other people's behavior that is happening in the General Assembly. A lot of times they're not getting through, but there's that instinct for people to, like, for instance, the homeless issue, that they're not contributing, but they are actually camping there, so they are occupying, so they are actually contributing. Well, that's what I want to talk about. The rules in the camp are actually from Dignity Village in Portland.
There are five rules that
Split the drug one and alcohol into six, I'm told.
Okay, yeah, from the Dignity Village in Portland, we took the five rules. I'm not sure if I can remember all of them, but certainly no violence, no drugs and alcohol. The fifth one was that everybody contribute in
no
some way.
No stealing and no disrupting were the other two.
Right, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
So there was that, that everybody contribute in some way. And so it has been discussed whether or not simply camping there for the folks that don't participate in any way except actually being there, whether that counts as participation.
I would say it does, because it is a crime, even though, you know, they can just throw the ticket away generally.
Good point.
It's costing more to put the homeless in jail than to leave them on the streets. So, it's, you know, the jails are getting all full because the state prison's dumping the prisoners back on the county. So that's another reason they're not going in and arresting people. They just won't have the room here very shortly. So, I thought they could, you know, wave a flag for 5 minutes and then get a meal ticket and go get a meal or something. I thought that was reasonable. And then Chris was saying, well, no, you know, really, all that's too much like workfare. All we really ask them for is to occupy. And I think he had a point there, because there's a lot of people on the steps that don't stay there. You know, should they not get food because they're not actually camping? I mean, it's, you know, who determines who's more worthy than the other? I think if you're going to get into activism, you got to expect you're not going to get paid, period. I mean, so if somebody else gets some of your food, I mean, I haven't eaten there. I won't ever eat there at the camp, so they can have my allotment of it. But then I never actually do any work either. I just go to the meetings. So that was a contentious, because that's how you framed your proposal to make. You also wanted to rope up the camps to make kind of fence. I do, like I said, I support a fence. I was thinking about that because somebody immediately after that said to talk to the fire marshal, because that is how Scipio beat one of the armies that were defending Carthage. Is their tents were too close together. It was very easy to start a fire that spread. So I think you have to maintain some kind of separation. I'm thinking, yeah, some kind of a fence, though, is really what you want. And not just between the homeless and the not homeless or whatever, but just, you know, I don't know. I think if you brought it up as violence, if we could cast out people that were violent from the rest of the camp and were thieving, because that's another big thing. A lot of people are getting their stuff stolen. If there's only one gate to get out of the area where all the stuff is, it's a lot harder to steal it because they have to walk by everybody.
Right, that's a good point. I have to say that if a proposal came up to simply exclude the people who were being violent, I would support that.
I think it might pass, because there was a lot of people that were going to block the cutting off for food part, or just throwing them out of the camp or something. But if you make it, you know, because that's how it works in Dignity Village. Everybody that joins, you know, consents to those rules, and they're also part of the, you know, enforcing power. If anyone breaks those rules, they're out of the camp. You know, that's part of joining the camp. And I think the drugs and alcohol might be a little too extreme for this thing. Because if somebody, I was thinking, you know, if somebody just drinks and passes out or something and doesn't bother anybody, that's not really a problem. It's when they're disruptive or violent or steal, I think, are the main really bad ones.
Right. Right. Yeah, in fact, I think there's an awful lot of people who drink or use other substances that aren't causing any problems at all, and that's fine with me. I'm not an anti-alcohol or anti-pot or any drug.
Yeah.
It's the problems, and there are some problems that come up probably from people who aren't intoxicated at all. I mean, so there's no direct correlation between the two. And I'm, you know, I wouldn't mind, for example, if somebody was drinking in their tent, didn't come out and cause any problems. I'm not going to be searching people's tents for alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like that.
Yeah.
So your point's a good one that, you know, people who exhibit certain behaviors, like violence, for example, doesn't matter whether they're drinking or not drinking. That seems like something that we'd want to exclude to keep ourselves safe and to let other people know, hey, you know what? All the people that are down here are people who have not committed any violence while they're here. So come on down.
People will feel safe within that protected area. And the more I'm thinking is those, you know, whatever those plastic big giant fences that they put up around crap, you know, just to slow people down.
Sure.
I don't know how expensive they are. Something like, because I was thinking your idea of using the ropes was a guerrilla way of creating a fence before the cops even know it was there. Because I think they're going to get upset about it, but fuck it. You know, they're going to put up a geodesic dome that the cops are certainly going to get upset about, the sheriffs. Anyways, so the fence would do, I think it'd go a long way. I mean, I have a military back. I'm not a military person, but I mean, I study a lot of military strategy. And yeah, that's one of the first things the Romans always did. Whenever they encamped, they put up a palisades, you know, of a wooden fence around their camp to protect them from being overrun during the night.
Right.
So I think that's critical, because this is an occupation. It's a form of warfare, a peaceful form of warfare. We're saying that, hey, we're claiming this territory just like they do in military.
Right. You know what I think? I think that it's totally appropriate. We had this discussion the other day, whether it's appropriate to have meetings outside of the working groups. In other words, a meeting that's not a General Assembly meeting, and it's not a working group meeting. Some people were a little upset, but I honestly believe that anybody who wants to get together and talk about policy, you know,
autonomous
should be...
Autonomous meetings.
Absolutely.
It's all about freedom. I mean, if you throw the freedom out, then what the fuck? I mean, you have nothing. You know, might as well just keep going with the fascism we have.
I'm hoping we can find some kind of compromise where we can get a proposal like that through the General Assembly.
I think we could. I mean, because you couched it, it sounded kind of like a class thing where they're poor. I mean, even when you were testing, I think Caleb or something was kind of against it. He didn't want to starve people. There was already, you could see there was going to be...
Right.
Dissent, even in the small sample of two or three people.
Right.
So you know it's not good. That's the thing about the General Assembly. I'm surprised that the mission statement group actually got their mission statement through. I mean, a few days before, they were each arguing about their own personal views of what it should be, and they eventually got it. You know, I mean, they did a pretty good statement that a lot of people liked.
Right, and you got to give them credit, because the process group has done the opposite. The process group has come up with quite a few proposals that we spent quite a bit of time on that were shot down by the General Assembly, and then all that time is not well spent. So you got to give them credit for coming up with something not just that I think is good, but something that people applauded and sailed it through, and nobody had anything bad to say about it.
There was a block on it because he wanted to say it said solutions beneficial to all, and he wanted to include not just humans, because we are killing the grass there. I mean, we're kind of screwing with the environment a little bit. But he, you know, everybody, you know, said, well, wait, if we put that, then we got to put everything out. We got to specify every little thing. And pretty soon we got a document that's, you know, 3-4 pages long. You know,
it was all about the definition of all. It's at first it sounded to him like we were saying all people, and it can be taken that way. But somebody can also say all as being everything.
That's right. That was the beauty of it. It said we don't believe in leaders. So the anarchists got a whole sentence there. We have no leaders. We could have also said we're all leaders, you know, but And there was, you know, for justice. It's up on the website at OccupySantaCruz.org if you want to check it out. There's the mission statement and the philosophy and strategy came up with the nonviolent and no property destruction statement too. So those are like general guiding principles now that you can, you know, you can look at whenever anything else you propose that, you know, like for so protecting the camp. Essentially, you can't really use violence then, or you're violating. It's not the mission statement. What's the other statement?
It's a statement of G. Willikers. Statement of principles. It's a statement of principles. I'm trying to find the right word.
The nonviolent one, anyways.
But, right. And so that's been brought up that in fact the camp and the working group, the committee for the camp, has been given a lot of autonomy. But, for example, they wouldn't be able to say, we're going to start carrying around nightsticks. we're not going to, if we hear that somebody has done something, we're not going to go beat them up over it.
Of that was happening, though. Somebody was telling me that some woman was aggressive. Woman was beating up a homeless man, and he offered $50 to some other woman to beat her up because he's a guy, he's not going to hit a woman, and some woman just ran out and, you know, punched her or something. But this was it wasn't GA kind of thing. It was autonomous.
That's what I thought. That's what I heard.
Heard about this one?
Yeah, that was an autonomous, a person who reacted to something like that by punching somebody out, as opposed to the Camp Alliance, the people that are working on keeping the group safe. They wouldn't use that as a policy. Oh, he did this, let's go beat him up. Because that would go against that statement.
So it becomes difficult, because that's what the cops use with dealing with these kind of people. They just start bringing out the nightsticks and wailing away. You know, give them an excuse. Oh boy, you know, it's party time, for especially certain cops on the force. But our force isn't as bad as, say, Oakland or San Francisco. Usually always big cities have worse police forces. They're harder to get rid of is the whole problem. Legally, you have to prove a pattern. You know, it's 10 times harder if there's 10 times the population, so it's very difficult to prove.
Right.
So they end up beating people up every year and getting away with it and end up with the pension in the end.
So we're also having conversations from the statement of principle that says we are completely nonviolent. We're having conversations about, if we're completely nonviolent, why have we been so far allowing people to
exactly.
stay in the camp
exactly.
that have repeatedly
exactly.
attacked people?
Turn it around. Instead of making it a class, you know, because everyone has to agree on that, and they can't really block it because it is the general principle of the occupation to be nonviolent. So.
And certainly they could block it right before they walk out, but it's, you know...
They're going to look horrible. I mean, because I know I was been on block, and then all of a sudden there's a whole lot of fucking pressure on you, you know? So everybody's throwing shit at you, you know? It's scary, you know? That's why most people don't block.
Right.
I think more people would, because everybody loves to put an amendment on, you know? They want to get their 2 cents in, but they don't really have to deal with everybody jumping on their case or absolutely blocking. So I've seen that in the small groups. Instead of blocking something they don't like, they'll table it, and that's why I don't like the small group. You know, I recommended you guys check them out, and I further recommend that you should actually provide facilitation. I started to facilitate the mission statement a little bit, and it really helped, I noticed, and I don't know fucking shit about facilitating.
Yeah, I had facilitated the camp group a couple of times, and in general, all the working groups, the committees, function a little bit differently. They don't have to use any process like the process we use at the General Assembly meetings, so they're all a little bit different. Some of them are very different, but the camp group's a little more casual, and when I facilitated, that seemed to be a little too structured for what they wanted. However, it seems to me that after I had facilitated that, the group got a lot more accomplished.
Noticed with the mission, because they were just had their own thing, and I just, well, can we make it more? I don't care if we had one or not. I didn't care what was in it, but I did want it to be short. I did kind of push. I wasn't completely neutral, so I did kind of push a conciseness, and there was a block on that, and eventually, though, it got lifted.
Well, we are asking people, requesting people, take the facilitator training, partly because we like to have a lot of people participating. We don't want to have the same faces up there over and over again.
Yeah, it starts to look like we got leaders, so
right.
That's partly why you do that.
Yeah. And so if people were actually, more people were taking the facilitator trainings, they would not only be able to facilitate the General Assembly, but then when they show up at their meeting, they'd say, hey, you know what, why don't we try this facilitator thing? Maybe we'll get some more accomplished.
I think the small groups should be required to actually, because I think that is the innovation that makes the meeting much better. Normally, you know, even on the website, in the process, they said that, you know, groups create better decisions than individuals, and you know, meetings are the worst way to come up with decisions. An expert individual, or a straight democracy where everybody has independent sources of information and they decide independently will create the wisdom of crowds, and they can kind of become like an expert. But once you have a meeting, then it becomes groupthink, and this prestigious individual said this, I don't want to go against it, you know, I won't get laid tonight or something, you know.
I've seen it.
All kinds of stuff, you know. It's fucking bullshit, man. The meetings are not the solution. All oppression came out of a meeting. Even kings, you know, they had a meeting with their top knights or whatever. All Jeez. Political oppression comes out of a meeting.
Good point, yeah. And I have seen that happen, and I really don't know how to go about it if you are at the same time trying to give people as much voice as possible. I mean, a lot of people have expressed that they really feel like their opinions, their voice hasn't been heard in the United States, and they want to participate.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about taking away their... I mean, we still got the meeting, but like I said, the facilitator kind of makes the meeting more acceptable, because if they're truly neutral, they'll move it along. They won't. I noticed the Grand Assembly, several people have tried to take it over as a leader and not been able to.
Right. There is, in the facilitator role, one of the most important parts is to try to, as much as possible, take yourself out of it. That you're just directing the process, and therefore the less you talk, the less your opinion is in there, the more people feel like you're just helping to direct things and not leading it, not controlling the discussion or using your position to try and get your opinions.
That's what it has to be, independent. And but otherwise, I just started cutting off people that talked a lot. I mean, like I said, I didn't do it. And I didn't really do it nicely either. I just said, you've been talking too much, you know. You're not on stack and stuff like that. I wasn't taking stack. Somebody started taking stack because I'm too blind to actually see the people to talk. But it does seem to help, because then the dominant personalities can't really dominate quite so easily.
Right. At one particular meeting, it was a working group meeting I was at, the person, and it was a large group, but the person who was supposedly facilitating was standing in the middle of the circle, and about two-thirds of everything that was said was him, and besides that, there was three or four people talking at once, and it was very difficult, except, of course, when he spoke. So it can devolve pretty badly, pretty quickly. It can fall apart, and... then you get the squeaky wheel getting greased. Those who are the most assertive, who want to talk the most, and the quieter ones are not getting anything heard. So facilitator, I think, is really good. Yeah. I don't know if it should be required. I don't know how the different groups...
I think it should, really. Because I do think people are playing power games in the smaller groups, and they're very dysfunctional. Most of them I've seen have been... There's some problem with them.
Right. Now, the process group has asked a couple of its members to sit in on different working groups. We had heard there were committees, working groups that were not functioning well. Mm-hmm. And so we've asked a couple of our members. We haven't gotten reports back yet, but I'll have to check on that. But we asked them to sit in and maybe come back with a short report and see if we can help them to improve things. And again, I don't know whether requiring that is a good idea, but... maybe the process group ought to bring that up and see if
I don't see why should they be allowed to not have that. I mean, why are if the small groups can do whatever they want, why shouldn't we do the same thing with the GA? I don't see why they shouldn't be similar.
You mean why we shouldn't mandate the working groups to have a facilitator or a certain
process?
I think
this process should send people into them to just because the they probably process doesn't really care because they're not a member of that group, so they're ideal and they know how to facilitate. They're ideal person to go in there.
Well, you know, I think one thing is I think a lot of people, and especially people in a movement like this, don't like to be controlled, don't like to be told what to do, and so I don't know that some of the groups might take offense to being told you have to run it this way or you have to.
Well, I mean, you don't have to be quite so, you know, procedural like you are in the Grand Assembly, because you're talking to 50 to 70 people. You're going to need more procedure. You can't just let people. But you know, if it's just 5 or 10 people, you might need a stack or maybe not. You don't need. You can let people run on more. You can take like I said, I don't even know how to do it, but I was just laying back. But you do need to just cut off the people that are trying to bully the meeting, I think.
Well, you know, the process group, now that you bring it up, the process group did require that each group choose somebody to make a report to the General Assembly. So we've already required one thing mm-hmm. of each of the working groups, which is that they choose somebody to make a report, or else what happens is, well, we don't get any reports.
We don't get any reports.
So it seems like something that, you know, has a precedent, and I don't know how well it would go over. And it's possible that some of the groups would say, yeah, all right, and they'd have, you know, the facilitating wouldn't work real well at first, but there's more of a possibility that they would get a good facilitation process going. They would see that it helps to move things along.
I think so. It does, really.
I will bring it up to the process group and see what they think.
And I just start, I mean, like I said, don't do it heavy-handed, but just, it's because everybody in a small group has an agenda. That's why they're there.
Right.
So, it's going to be difficult for them to facilitate themselves. So I think people that don't give a shit go in those groups and help facilitate until they start giving a shit, because it's hard not to get involved when you start participating, you know. Wait a minute, that sounds good. Oops, I'm not really facilitating correctly anymore. I've seen that happen in the GA, too. It's hard.
Yeah. Well, the process group has plenty to do. We never run out of things to talk about in the group. There's always adjustments, because it's not only the General Assembly, but like we've just discovered, the working groups, the committees, you know, need a little bit of tinkering once in a while. And I think if we can get more people to go to facilitator trainings, and possibly your idea of you know, suggesting some facilitation. Because there are some groups that don't seem to be getting it done, and they're not unimportant groups, you know.
Well, yeah, some of them are totally run by a dictator, you know, and you know, it's only what they want to do, and they only meet when that person wants them. And it's just, and you know, the person that reports back, that of course the power person is going to want to be that person, because then they're speaking to the group. So the person that reports back should not be facilitating.
And one of the things that the process group has been working on the last couple of days is ideas for trying to get more people to participate in the working groups. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like some of the working groups are small. Obviously, tonight I announced that I was the only person, and then one woman raised her
hand. Roxanne said, wait.
Roxanne said, yeah. that there are actually two people on the sanitation group. But we need more than that, actually, on the sanitation group. And there are other groups that are very small. And you know, the meeting
times.
Well,
if you start talking about, you know, dumping your compost in front of a bank, I think a lot of people might join that group.
Yeah, good point, good point. So join the sanitation group and bring up that particular idea. And I don't know, is that something we should bring to the General Assembly? Should we just dump it?
Because you were saying, I've got all this compost, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. You said you found somewhere, but I
Yeah, we did. We did a couple places. But I think that would get support from the General Assembly anyway. You know, it's compost. So,
well, I mean, that is, you're getting in trouble if you dump it in front of the BFA, but it's just a joke. Well, somebody might do it, but
somebody might do it.
Yeah, it's not a bad joke. It is direct action. It's true direct action. It's not just tactics. It's true direct action. Not that I'm advising it or in any way. I never break the law, except when I get high. What was I going to say? Oh, you know, like the philosophy and strategy group, you know, they don't even meet anymore. They were totally embarrassed in front of the General Assembly. It was like 26 people, and they were like fighting and couldn't come to any conclusions, and that's why the mission statement was formed. But I was thinking, you know, a group like that, you know, split it between strategy and philosophy, and then just move philosophy, have them meet in front of a bank. You know, they're going to close down that bank all day long.
In their defense, I was at that one particular meeting where there was 25 people or so.
That's probably the one.
It wasn't
at the GA. It was over in some alley or something.
Yeah, it was a little tea shop. It was the Satori Tea, whatever, place on the Squid Row. The philosophy group, which I really appreciate. I really liked the folks. I really liked what they were doing. But there were a lot of people who felt that they were supposed to come up with a mission statement and supposed to come up with it in a timely manner, and that they weren't doing that. So instead of the normal three or four or five people who they had, you know, at their regular meetings, they got bombarded by people who were coming in there to say, hey, you know, we got to get a mission statement going. And I think that's what really happened, is that meeting was out of control. And there were a lot of people disagreeing with what they wanted. They wanted to come out with a statement that to me spoke about, for example, they were mentioning the interconnectedness of all things, and that, and it was, well,
that'll really bring converts in.
Yeah, it was. Well, I thought part of it was very good. They were suggesting that it wasn't just the people who were very greedy, or the people who were born in rich families and went to a well-to-do school and then decided to become investment bankers or what have you, but that it's the imperfections of all of us, and that through apathy or through comfort, like I know somebody who puts his money in a bank because he said that the credit union doesn't have very good service.
That's right.
You know,
somebody just moved their money to the local one, and you say, "I can't even get it out now. They're fucking jerking me around." And I heard everybody doesn't like that credit.
Right. So it was kind of a the philosophy group was coming up with statements around we have to be the change that we want to see in the world, as opposed to blaming it on other people. But they were very slow and meticulous, and. Yeah, it was a little bit grueling, to tell you the truth. They were good folks.
The first night at Loud Nelson, when there was like 200, the most people I've ever seen at any of these, there was like 200. And that group was huge. About 20, 30 people in it. And they were flinging around Point of Process. I mean, they knew Process really well. I mean, me and Ed were like looking at it and go, there's more legal procedure going on in this subgroup than in the legal subgroup. They're going violent, nonviolent, And they came up with something, and then it didn't pass the GA. And they go, what the hell? I mean, we spent over 2 hours on this. I don't see how we're going to improve it. And they just added, I think, defacement or something else, and that passed. I don't know.
Right.
I missed those meetings. So, we give them a hard time. But philosophers, they never get anything done. Come on. It's going to attract people like that.
Right.
Because I don't think strategy should be with tactics. That's more of a, how you actually achieve your objectives. Philosophy is just how you feel about life.
Right. And I think there was a discussion at that meeting about the difference between strategy and tactics, and tactics being, something that you would, a specific thing that you would do. Strategy is more of a grand plan, and so they were coming up with trying to come up with a philosophy, and then from that philosophy they would generate a grand plan and let the tactics group come up with tactics to implement that strategy,
yeah.
I guess. But I feel a little bit sorry for them, because they did get bombarded by a huge number of people who just weren't ready for that kind of meeting or that kind of philosophy statement.
Yeah, well, we didn't say any names or anything.
No.
Like I said, they knew how to do anarchism really well.
I hope we have some kind of assignment for them, some kind of task for them to do, because they're really talented people, and we've got to come up with something for them to do. They're fabulous folks, and they really got shut down on this one.
They went autonomous, I think they said.
The what? I'm sorry.
They went autonomous, they said.
Yeah, they went very, very autonomous. But one of them wants to do some nonviolent communication training, but I really would like to see them working on something, because they're very talented people.
Yeah, I'm just teasing. I don't even know.
They're good guys. They're good guys. Good folks.
So did you know a lot of these people before you came? Because like you're more of a moderate, you're Democrat. You help. Canada.
Yeah, I would never call myself a moderate Democrat. I think I'm more moderate than
old
than
style
someone.
Democrat. I mean. Now you'd be a radical left Democrat, but
well, I'd like to consider
myself
a
moderate, because I'm a kind of a radical. The only one I really think more radical than me is Chris, and he's looking at 15 years plus. So.
Yeah, I'm a socialist in philosophy, but maybe I'm just too pragmatic or practical. I've to be active in forming socialist groups and working with socialist groups. Not that I think that's wrong. I think it's an excellent idea. People have brought up to me that it's necessary to have a socialist group ready for if and when things fall apart. And therefore, it's a high priority to work on organizing a socialist group. But
are you talking about here at the GA? Or
no, I was talking about here in Santa Cruz in general, and people who are politically active, because I am a socialist philosophically, but I've just never seen anything practical, whereas working on initiatives or trying to get someone like Barbara Boxer reelected has always seemed practical to me. I would prefer Barbara Boxer in the Senate to a Republican, for example. So I've spent a lot of time doing stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't actually vote myself. I mean, I tried it. It didn't work.
Yeah, boy, does it not work.
But, I'm not opposed to people pushing, especially on ballot initiatives, because you can write your own. You can get those signatures if it's something that really charges people up, and you could change the political environment you live in. I mean, sticking your head in the sand and pretending the government doesn't really exist. You're paying rent. I mean, you're stuck in a system, so you might as well push back on it. And that's what I think the left has kind of quit pushing back through established channels.
Right. I met Peter Matthews, whose oil tax initiative, to fund education, they failed to get enough signatures the first time, and he has just started a second attempt to get that on. And there are a lot of people who think that the oil companies haven't been paying their fair share in royalties, fees, or taxes.
Oh, hell no. I mean, we put, what, $1 trillion on the war in the Middle East or here, too, to whatever it is. I mean, that's to benefit them, mostly, So, they should be paying for that $2 trillion. Why are we, the taxpayers, paying for it all the time?
Right. It seems to me companies like ExxonMobil making, what, $14 billion in profits a couple years ago, they make huge profits and use that money to buy legislation so that they don't have to pay taxes.
I mean, $1 trillion for the war, they only make $14 billion, and they can buy a congressman for a few hundred thousand.
They're pretty cheap.
Cheap, really. Yeah. It's disgusting.
So the initiative process has a lot of things that I like it also. It might be a little more difficult to get stuff like that through Congress, but all you have to do is get 504,000 signatures, valid signatures. And then the people get to vote on it in November.
Talking about state. I mean, there is no federal.
No. I'm talking about the state of California. Yeah. 504, I believe, 1,000 signatures, valid signatures, and then we get to vote on it. So it's a good process.
And with the internet, it's very easy to get. You can get digital signatures and stuff like that. Right?
Okay. And you see, I'm still.
I don't know. I imagine so. Or you can print it out and sign it, and it's much easier.
Well, certainly, we've been printing out copies of the initiative. You can get that on the internet and print that out. I honestly don't know, but as far as I know, you have to get real live signatures. I could easily be wrong about that, but
I'm just pulling shit out of air. I would think. Well, anyways, you can print it out and sign it right there and mail it in. It's much easier. You don't have to wait for somebody to walk up to you. Speaking of which, there is a recall of the sheriff going around from the Stop Smart Meters. Maybe we should have one of those up on the board.
Right. I'd love to hear more about that. I looked at that on the internet. There is a recall of the sheriff because PG&E has managed to, even though the county supervisors decided not to allow smart meters, PG&E said, oh, okay, and they did it anyway. And the sheriff has not been enforcing that. Do you know anything about
that? Yeah, it was near where I live, so I started going to them, and then I was reading the law. The people that are most affected, it's not clear whether it's completely damaging. I know I feel electrical stuff, so there's probably something to it, and there's probably some cancer. There's been some studies on cancer and, power lines and stuff like that. That's suggestive. So, but the people that are affected by it are the kids. They're the ones, because they've got the smaller skulls and they're still growing, and so they're the ones that are going to get cancer and stuff. So, I kind of went off on a cop once right in front of it, and I was walking down the street a few weeks later, and he drives up to me and he goes, you should be nice to people. And I'm blind, I didn't recognize him. I go, I don't know you. And he had to move on. I go, man, I'm getting too well known at this protest, because you gotta fucking speak up. So it just goes against my natural. Here no one sees my face, we don't have all that many listeners. It goes on the web, they get a few more listeners there, but nobody knows who I am. But there's people that knew my name, and I didn't know who they were, and it makes me nervous.
Well, we really like having you there, and in fact, everybody that goes there and speaks up, I think, is important. I think there have been people who've made some really important decisions, some blocks on procedure. Yeah. If that person wasn't there, we could have made a big mistake. I've seen you do a couple of things that I thought were really important.
Actually, we can talk about it. That's kind of why I put you on here, because I mean, you talked about my block on the next day thing, because I was joined by Ed on the one for blocking, stopping individuals from being able to put, But that one was all, I was the only way. I kind of liked the idea of having, letting people think a lot. But then people aren't going to show up the next day. There was people saying, it makes it a burden for me, you know. I drive in from Boulder Creek or so, it's too far, you know. So I'm automatically against anything that's going to make it harder for the individual to get their voice heard. So, and then I heard that you had a half-hour discussion that night and decided that the block was invalid, so I had to join your meeting the next day, and you ganged up on me, but you actually came around, so you finally admitted at the end that, well, okay, it was a valid block, because it was kind of, the rights of the individual, and it was a moral position. And
so absolutely. Our most recent recommendation starts out with the phrase, while anyone can put anything on the agenda, and we could have added at any time, while anyone can put anything on the agenda, we recommend that people, I think it was recommend, that people announce it at least one day ahead of time, because we do want to let people know that, yeah, if you can't make it 2 days in a row, it's not an absolute requirement, but we're trying to model that as much as possible, because I think the ones that are announced a day or two before, people get to talk, like I said, talk about it, think about it. I think it's an advantage when possible. So.
Yeah, well, my feeling is, especially when it's a law or some rule that you're going to try and inhibit people's behavior, people should find out about it ahead of time and be able to,
And when we first tried to put that through the General Assembly and it failed, it was because we made it a requirement. And I think right to stop that.
And then he switched it to recommendation. I'm still blocking it. I'm under stress. Like, wait, now I'm not letting him make recommendation. Chris, Commander X, he goes, well, I think the General Assembly has a right to put on recommendation. Oh, yeah, they do. But okay, I removed my block. But I didn't want to stress because, once it's, people don't always remember the note takes aren't there. They could turn into requirement very easily because it's almost halfway there,
Sure.
And Lee brought, when you brought it back again to add the amendment that they could create a small group of their own to, help come up with improve the proposal, you just tacked that on the end and put the other one on, and Lee said the same, wait a minute, recommendations become requirements, and he didn't like it either. But we got through that time. But
right,
because it was still, I didn't block it because it was the same thing, essentially, just added that you can make. What does that mean, you can make a small group? You put a proposal up, you can also...
Right. We recommended that you announce it... gee willikers, I can't remember the exact wording, but either a working group or an ad hoc group. Basically, an ad hoc group could be one person, but if you're creating an ad hoc group, that's kind of inviting people to talk to you about it. It's,
So that does, is this something that you put a proposal on, and then you're gonna delay it till the next day? Do you automatically get the right to create an ad hoc group without any approval of the GA?
That's correct. You can if you want to put a proposal on, you get to create an ad hoc committee in order to...
I kind of like it because that's empowering the individual more.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And inviting people casually at the same time, I've got an ad hoc committee, come and talk to me, join my little committee. So I think that, trial and error, we're coming up with some good proposals, and I think we're changing it. I think we're actually improving the process,
I think that was a pretty good one. Yeah, the thumb down's one to help. Yeah, well, nobody's actually done it yet, as far as I know, the ad hoc group. I've seen some new groups, like the Rouse Response Team. Were you there when they passed out?
No, that was a reconciliation. Are you talking about the reconciliation team that's going to try to iron out little difficulties? After the Peace and Reconciliation group in tribunal in South Africa, they wanted to, if there was a real serious incident, the camp, they wanted to go talk with the people and see if they can get it worked out. So there's...
No, that's the tribunal. We're talking about court here, then, essentially mediation or arbitration or something.
Right. No, I was talking about the South African Truth and Reconciliation group, whatever it was, after apartheid was dismantled, and there was a lot of animosity between black Africans and white Africans, that they decided they needed a group to kind of, smooth out the rough edges. So there is a group that's just started that's going to try to smooth out the rough edges between individuals if there's a fight or if there's a real serious problem at the camp.
That's where you need that not necessarily non-violence protesting training, but non-violence mediation kind of training.
Right, and we sure could use a lot more of that. I think some people
I know
have
John
taken
Malkin
it.
Knows something about that. That's one of his specialties. He was by the other day.
We'd like a lot more of that, and we're trying to, when we do arrange those, trying to get those up on the board and up on the website as quickly as possible, because we would like as many people as possible to take nonviolent civil resistance and nonviolent communication trainings pretty much as soon as possible. I think both of those are an advantage.
Yeah,
anybody who knows somebody who wants to do some trainings, we're, you know, the Resource Center for Nonviolence is doing some.
Yeah, maybe you should have a day of training so people would know that they could come for training. Because part of it, you know, like you don't know what's going on when you go there. There's a lot of times nothing's going on. I mean, you got boards, but, it's hard to find.
There's a lot of scribble everywhere.
Yeah, I can't read those things. I can't read handwriting, and it's not high contrast, so. But if you knew, I think the same thing with the free school is too spread out. You know, if they had just, you know, a day of a bunch of classes at the free school, you could just go that day and pick between different. I think some other group does that over in Live Oak once a year. And I think that's going to be more attractive to people than just a single class that's on a day that, you know, isn't regular and you don't know. If you know every day, Saturday, there's going to be a bunch of classes or something, or Sunday or whatever, and the protests are on Saturday. And
it seems like a good idea. Yeah. It seems like a good idea to me. Somebody that's got a few hours might be able to take a facilitator training and an NVC class, an NVC training, and get themselves within a few hours caught up on some real important info and training. Do a little bit of role modeling. If it's a day long or a half a day thing, then you get a little bit of role playing in there, not role modeling.
You had that Starhawk lecture or whatever that one time. And
right, and I didn't get to attend that.
I didn't either, but a lot of people were telling me about it. So that kind of stuff. See, because it's also a form of entertainment, too. Because you need things to do at the camp or at the Grand Assembly when there's not a Grand Assembly at the stuff. Something to keep
well,
the
that's
revolution
right.
going on. I mean, because there was a big party last night. It was went to like 4 in the morning.
And I didn't get to attend that either. I was way too tired. I need some sleep, but it was really fun.
I started a little before 10, and then I left by 10:30 because I don't know. I didn't have any drugs with me. But it was, that I heard it was great. And I mean, that is the best location in town, I think. Really. Because you could be till 4 in the morning. It was fucking loud, man, at 10:30. And they told, oh, yeah, we kept the volume up till 4 in the morning.
Wow.
There's nobody around there, really.
Right, huh. Interesting.
No residents. I mean, it's all businesses that are closed at night. So you can party down there and shit.
And I think you're right, just to go back, I think you're right about we've got a lot of time during the days when, you know, the table's up, there's information, but besides that, people are just hanging out, and, you know, we could do some trainings there. So, again, part of it is getting people to be willing to give the training sessions, and we've got a couple facilitator trainings twice a week, and the nonviolent communication and the other class not quite so often, so we've got to get some more people who are willing and able to
Well, the give weekends are your best bet, because there's going to be more people available.
Right.
And if you're, you know, I mean, you could do it all through the week, sure, but there should be a day where you can get a lot of training, you can go to a lot of, there's a lot of shit to do or something, you know, like first night or something. It used to be you could go to all these different venues. It's more attractive if there's a variety of things you can do when you get there. I was thinking of having sports there, but it looks like the camp's growing so fast and there's not going to be room for any sports.
No, that's right, huh? Certainly not.
It's
anything
bigger.
That takes a field.
That's the other nice thing about that location. It can support quite a number of people. if hundreds of people came, there's room for them.
Well, and that's right.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
It is our actually town hall for Santa Cruz. I mean, most of the big events happen in that park on that grass.
That's right. I think most of those events don't happen at night. There's, you know, a kind of a different thing going on at night, but it is like the town hall, the town center there. And plenty of room, and you know, the Wham Fest and some of the other events there are really superb. It's a great spot, and I think the camp size could potentially double. I know on the other side of the bridge there is still a lot more grass. On the other side of the
walking bridge?
Yeah, the walking bridge that's right next to...
Oh, because the soccer people get the grass in the middle or something. They have a contract with the city or some shit. There's issues about that, right?
Right, and in fact, I should probably write this down. I should call the Parks and Rec and find out if, now that they've removed that tape and all the holes they were digging, if the Youth Soccer League is in fact going to try and play there this Saturday. Because what I'd heard before was the campers who are, you know, the furthest away from Water Street are are actually already on the soccer field and might prevent the Youth Soccer League from playing. So I'm supposed to be calling up the Parks and Rec tomorrow and checking with them on that.
Right. So you're on all the committees. You get all the dirty work there, Tom.
Well, somebody's got to do it, and you know, it just takes a phone call. So, but on the other side of the bridge, there's also a whole bunch of grass. There's also a whole lot of room. So there's, you know, if it did get really large, we could just have that soccer field in the middle and then you know, have a second camp over the other side of the bridge.
And once it's big enough, then you can take over the front of the courthouse, the jail.
Yeah, actually, once it gets big enough, they wouldn't have enough places to lock us up. I know when I was at Diablo Canyon and they arrested people, they had to put us in a basketball gymnasium.
They'll just move you down to the other end of the park. You know, there's really nowhere else to put you.
Well, that's right. They could just build a cage around
us,
couldn't
they?
Sure.
There's your fence problem right there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, I guess we're running a little into the next show. I mean, is there anything else you had on your mind?
No. You know, if anybody is listening, and I hope there is, please come and join us. You know, we need lots of extra help, and it's really kind of fun and very educational, and... you know, if you do want to change the system, change the situation that we have, I honestly believe it's not going to be through the political system. Yeah. I honestly believe we're going to have to do something like this. I believe that they are doing what they want and laughing at us, and that you know, we're going to have to do something like this to make the changes that we want. So please come down and join us, and then join one of our working groups. We certainly need some help with that. But that's all for me. Sure.
But, and I was going to say, with all these Occupies all over the nation, you know, it's, if you want to go traveling, you've got a place to stay almost everywhere you go.
Right.
A lot of times there's free food, too.
Sure enough.
Yeah. And you know, as it gets colder, all you people in Nebraska and Montana Occupy, it's fucking nice in Santa Cruz. It's nice.
Come out and join ours.
That's right.
Sure. I wonder if that'll happen during the winter. Some of the Occupies will get a little smaller, and some of
that's
the more
right.
temperate ones might get a little bigger.
What would you do, man? Would you want to go to... You're not going to Nebraska and Occupy.
I am not moving my absolutely not. In fact, I'm staying here in Santa Cruz for sure.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you for having me on, for you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, because we do get, I mean, we put it up on the web, and we get listeners all over the place, so pass the word.
Shall do.
And not just anarchists. We'd like to get people here that will vote in the next election and take over this town and throw those fucking fascists out. All right, this has been Free the Land on Free Radio Santa Cruz, November 1st, 2011. Thanks for listening.
First you told Sony through you could we know God, and if we dared to question, then he wouldn't spare the rod. For you we worked the soil, for you we dug the moors, for you we shed our blood, fought so many pointless wars. And now you build your fences and you say there's nothing we can do. You say the world around us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree this world is our home, not your property. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball in shame. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores. But because you own the money, say that it's all yours. We laid the phone lines and the pipelines, and then right before our eyes, you see these things are taxes paid. You now will privatize the hospitals, privatize the schools, privatize the prisons for all those who break your rules and preparing for the day. When all the wells run dry, you say you own the very rain that falls down from the sky, but it's the time. I'm right up bird, and you hoot on the water all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. You claim to own the harvest with your Terminator seed. You claim to own the genome of every animal that breeds. You claim to own our culture and the music that we play. And with each song that we down, to your coffers we must pay. You'd even own my name, and you'd say it's for the best. Maybe you'll let us on your radio, have our songs pass your test. You own country, you own western, you say you've given us a choice. You may own the airwaves, but you'll never own my voice. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you hold on the music all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You who sacrifice the public good for your private gain. It's the commons, our right of birth. Sacrifice the public good for your private gain.